We've talked about this before.
I would say we're in good
You've
company.
You've talked about this before? Sean. Hey, this is Forrest with Concrete Conversations. I'm not joined today by my wife, Arian. She found something better to do. I think she's working on her high score on Tetris or something like that. I don't remember what it was. Anyway, she's busy. So it's just me, myself, and I. And I was talking today with Sean Faber and Kent Groh. Kent Groh Kowalski. Kent. I was talking with Sean and Kent, great guys from the Geoholics podcast. And they have a lot of interesting stuff. We talked about surveying and what that means. We talked about the future of surveying. We talked about the problem of getting kids into survey and attracting younger generations. We talked about prostitution. It was just a lot of – we covered a lot of ground, maybe some ground that could have been left uncovered. But most of it was good, like 95% of it. So highly recommend you listen to 95% of this episode. You'll 95% guaranteed love it. We had about 30,000 questions that came in just specifically for you guys.
Oh, okay, cool.
Nice. Have to read these verbatim. Otherwise, you know, there are legal implications if I don't. So Kent and Sean, you host the most successful podcast on the interweb. In fact, recent numbers show that the Geoholics podcast just surpassed the Joe Rogan Experience in downloads. So what's the secret to your success? And have you started taking jiu-jitsu in case Joe Rogan decides to come after you personally?
Oh, man, great question. Well, we recently started doing more video, so I'd like to attribute our success to my face. But I will let Kent comment more on
your face. You don't want me to comment on your face.
No.
But since I do consider Joe Rogan a close personal friend.
Correct.
Hopefully he's not going to be too mad that we just surpassed him.
Well, he does listen every week, and you guys talk every week.
Pretty much.
So I'm assuming you can smooth it over.
Yeah, we'll be fine. We'll be fine. Yeah. But no, to answer your question, I contribute our success to, a number of different things. But I think consistency, first and foremost.
Yeah, longevity.
Yep. I think that, you know, our mantra, our show mantra, is add value, make friends. And to be honest with you, that's kind of how we look at each show. You know, if we can add value with every episode and make a new friend or two,
that's correct.
We're doing our job and we're going to continue to carry on.
That's right.
Yep. But it's the people, you know, I mean, our listeners have been very loyal. Our friends of the program have been very loyal. You know, Sean being producer/co-host has made a huge impact. And, you know, we have Peter Cox, one of our guest co-hosts. He's also our global marketing manager, Nick Smolovsky, GIS extraordinaire. And of course, Mark Taylor.
Yeah.
You know, Chief Geek, as we like to call him. So yeah, we have a lot of things that contribute to our success and a lot of people to thank for that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Tell us about Geoholics, about the Geoholics podcast for the 6 or 7 people in the world who haven't heard the Geoholics podcast. What is that? And what, besides the mantra that you just told us, what's kind of your focus in the guests that you have on, in your talking points, all that?
Sure. You want to go first?
No, you got the elevator speech. You got to do it.
Oh, gosh, the elevator speech. You know what? I was just looking for that right before we jumped on here. Because I'm like, I know I have this written out somewhere.
And ChatGPT was busy at the moment, so you had to wait for the servers to calm down.
Speaking of ChatGPT, you're going to love this. I'm totally off topic here, but we're playing in a big curling event coming up, right? So I went on ChatGPT, and I'm like, cool curling team names, right? And sure enough, it came back with some freaking hilarious stuff we'll probably use. But anyways, about the show, we started about five years ago. Insane. It'll be five years.
This is the 5th year.
Yep. Incredible. We started like in the back room of a shitty bar, hopefully I can swear, in Tempe, and had no idea what the hell we were doing, you know. Recorded the first episode like on some crappy, I almost swore again, analog equipment, and just we just you know, recorded some BS, posted it. All of a sudden we got five downloads, you know, like, holy cow, five people listen to this crap, really? So we just kept going. And the intent in the beginning, and still is the core of the podcast, was to cater to geospatial professionals. So anybody in the surveying, mapping, GIS, you know, BIM, reality capture, you know, those fields, you know, I guess more specifically. And we've created a niche as a result.
Yeah.
But at the same time, over the course of the 5 years, it has grown to so much more than that. One of the things we like to say is that we basically want to talk about the developing 4D world.
Yeah.
I think that's good summary of, you know, the conversations that we like to have.
Yeah, we're working on a new 2024 elevator speech, and kind of just for the show, because we all agree we may have hit the end of the geospatial community, and not to say that we encompass it, but there's just so many other industry adjacent things out there that if you know this guy, then you should be AEC space and more in construction and more in architects. Mm-hmm. And it really just kind of trying to capture that expanse as we continue to grow.
Yeah, the geospatial umbrella continues to expand.
Correct.
That's for sure. So, you know, we're adjusting on the fly, mm-hmm. and, you know, doing everything we can to make sure that our conversations are relevant.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So with Geoholics, I mean, the name... This is our next question, submitted by one of the one of our listeners from Zimbabwe. Said, with a name like Geoholics, you might wonder, is this podcast somewhat habit forming? Can I only listen to the podcast if I'm over 21? Is it legal for me to listen to the podcast while driving or operating heavy machinery? And if I listen to the podcast for too long, am I going to regret it the next morning? So can you speak to that a little bit?
Go ahead.
Yeah. It is absolutely habit forming. And I think our downloads and listenership speak to that. It is somewhat profane, but it's really open to all adults. We consider adults, you know, 15 and up.
12. Okay. Whoa, I've got an adult son. Can operate, that's amazing.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Turn them on.
You can't operate or listen while operating heavy machinery. We actually encourage it.
Mm, yes. Mm-hmm.
It really makes a workday go by, or an hour on commute to a job site. It's a great way to pass the time. Yeah. And the last question, will you regret it afterwards? A solid 50% of the shows, if you make it all the way through, you will most likely regret that.
Not exactly, but we have created, just FYI, we have created a Geoholics Anonymous.
Yes.
So for those that are really struggling with being a geoholic, we have the Geoholics Anonymous that we are now posting twice a month.
Yeah. What exactly is that again?
What's that?
The Geoholics Anonymous.
What is it exactly? So it's really one-on-one conversations with people that are just geoholics, really, you know. We're trying to counsel them
on the road.
Yep.
Yeah, a little 15 minute snapshots. Yep. Maybe
wherever they want to have the conversation, we'll come to them if necessary.
You have local chapters? I hope so.
We're working on that.
Yeah, okay, that is in our 2024 plan.
That's in your okay. Got
we're
it.
Looking
okay.
for regional. Regional Geoholic Anonymous counselors at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. The first step is facilitators. Counselors. Yeah. And then the people will come.
Group facilitators.
Yeah. No, the first step is to admit you have a problem.
That is correct.
Yes. And then seek out your nearest Geoholic counselor.
So tell me a little bit about surveying. So to be clear, are you, what are your job titles outside of Geoholics? What do you do on your regular 9-to-5 that doesn't have anything to do with the podcast to put food on the table, roof over your head?
Well, Sean.
Well, for Kent, it's more of a 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, Thursdays, and sometimes Tuesdays. But go ahead, Kent. What's your you got one of those fancy titles?
Now, I was going to say that your title is going to take a lot more time to describe. So I'm going to go first.
Okay, go ahead.
So really simply, I am a professional land surveyor. I've been working in the survey industry for 33 years, I guess, at this point. And currently I am a market leader for a mid-size AEC company in the Southwest region.
Okay. I think that somewhat explains itself. I am a professional engineer, professional civil engineer, I should say.
You almost said surveyor.
I almost said surveyor. So my technical experience is mostly in the geotechnical construction materials testing and engineering space. I'm currently the principal of a mid-size engineering survey and geotechnical firm. And I manage those departments, manage a small survey department, a civil department, and a fairly large geotechnical and material testing department.
Okay, yeah. So you guys are deep into geotech and surveying and things having to do with measuring the earth and the things that are in it, very, very broadly speaking. Is that fair?
Fair, yes.
Okay, great. So is the surveying... So, and I'm a, I own a, you guys both talked about owning a mid-size, let's call mine mid-size. If we talk about a large utility locating company, let's say a large utility locating company has five people, then we'll call mine a mid-sized, utility locating firm. So I have a very mid-sized utility locating firm and, we find pipes underground. We use ground penetrating radar to find other things also. But a lot of what we do involves finding stuff underground. And so because we're finding things underground and then somehow relaying that location to our customers, be it a plumber, an electrician, every once in a while a homeowner, but, you know, general contractor, property owner, we interact with surveyors on a very regular basis. And so I've become... kind of by accident, somewhat familiar with what surveying is and what it takes to become a surveyor. And all I really know is that it seems to vary widely from, like, very significantly from state to state. Why is there so much variance for surveyors from state to state? It seems like some states, it's really fairly straightforward and simple to get into surveying. And other states, it's just slightly below getting a medical degree. Why so much variance? Do you guys have any response to that?
What is this, like an hour-long show? Because I'm not sure Kent can see his response.
2 hours. 2 hours. Yeah, we're good.
My mind's about to explode right now. So the short answer is, as a profession, and I'll get crap for this, but we can't get our shit together, to be honest with you. No. I tell people all the time, I live, of course, here in the state of Arizona. You do not need to have a college degree to get a surveyor's license in the state of Arizona. I tell them, I'm like, my dog can essentially get licensed in the state of Arizona and become a land surveyor.
But he's a pretty smart dog.
he is for sure. But it's as a surveyor myself, it's a little frustrating, to be honest with you, because Arizona's, you know, one of the few states where you don't need to have any post-secondary education. And then you have other states where it requires a 4-year degree. So it's, and it makes it difficult because, you know, let's say my only license was in Arizona. I don't have a 4-year degree in surveying. I have a 2-year degree. Well, no, I have technically a 4-year degree in architecture. But if I wanted to go and get licensed in a state that requires a 4-year degree in geomatics, even though I got 30 plus years experience and I'm licensed in 3 other states that don't require that, then I would not be able to get licensed in those states. So, you know, I would love to see that there was a universal requirement across all the states.
But why isn't there? Yeah, why isn't? And why are all states different?
I don't know. I can't tell you the answer for that. I don't know how those requirements got established originally. You know, I mean, some states have increased their requirements. I can tell you that, like in Illinois, where I have a license in Illinois. When I got licensed there, there wasn't a 4-year degree required, and now there is. So some states have increased their requirements for becoming a licensed surveyor. I don't see Arizona ever doing that. I mean, it would take everybody in the profession that has a voting right in the state to, you know, to make that change. And I just don't see it. I wish I had a really good answer for you, Forrest, but I don't. And it's frustrating to me as well.
Yeah. Well, and I know, I mean, just next door here in California, we have the we have a lot of very strict regulations concerning surveying, what is and is not surveying, and in other states. You know, I'm very active on LinkedIn, and I communicate with a lot of surveyors from around the country, and there are some surveyors who would who are very not happy at all with the fact that I do what I do, that I ever convey the information about the location of a buried asset in any way to anybody else, that information should only be conveyed by a professional land survey, by somebody who's got a PLS. And that, you know, so surveying, do I have this correct, that the definition of surveying from a very very general definition would be just measuring the earth? Is that accurate, or am I off on that?
I think that is a very broad stroke, but it's not wrong. And I think, Forrest, you and I actually had conversations, gosh, probably a year or two ago, about, you know, you getting pressure from surveyors for, you know, doing the level of mapping that you're doing. And it's really no different than GIS, right? Mm-hmm. GIS, I mean, those folks are mapping things all the time, you know. Obviously, it's not survey grade accuracy, but a lot of times survey grade accuracy is not required, let's face it. And the thing is, you know, as far as surveyors go, I mean, yeah, surveyors want to complain all the time and, you know, criticize people for doing mapping when they think they should be doing it. The reality is that even in Arizona, you know, you can, if you're an engineer, and you feel comfortable, you know, using GPS equipment, or you have people that are comfortable with it, they can go out there and do a topo, right?
What's a topo?
Topographic survey.
Okay, got it.
And they can bring that data back in, and your staff can process that data, and you as an engineer can do a design based on that information. Yep. I mean, yeah, there's probably some risk. You know, it isn't certified by a land surveyor, but it doesn't need to be.
Right.
In Arizona.
And I always thought that it was by the definition, you're measuring the earth and or the location of objects on the earth, however you want to describe it. And then I thought it was to the degree or either the stated or implied level of accuracy that you are associating with your data.
I mean, it depends.
And if you aren't stating that, hey, this is, then that's why GIS gets away with it. They give you a map, and then somewhere on there is a disclaimer that says, hey, this is good, probably about 20 feet or whatever. They might not even say it. It's just, hey, it's accurate to, you know, how accurate you think it is what you think, not what I'm implying. Mm-hmm. Some weasel language around that. And that's how they get around it. And if you're doing the same thing for us and saying, hey, here's where this is, here's the tools I used to do it, and here's the level of accuracy you should rely on, then you technically should be able to do that up until the point where you cross over the line where a registered land surveyor can only say, okay, I can assure you that this is that location within that error.
And in addition to those CYA statements, it all depends on the end user and what they're expecting.
Right.
You know, I mean, what they're expecting is it's required to have a licensed surveyor sign off on it, that's great. But more and more, I mean, gosh, with all the technology that we have at our fingertips now, I mean, there's tons of people out there doing mobile LiDAR, let's face it, tons of people doing terrestrial scanning that they're not licensed surveyors. You know, the whole reality capture thing, it's an interesting time for surveyors.
Yeah, and in Forrest's case, it's not like he's saying, hey, that pipe is here and it's 3.27 feet below, you know, underground, and someone's going to take that and then dig 3.276 feet, accidentally hit it and say, well, Forrest told me to the thousandth of a foot where it was, and I blindly relied on that. Like, this is not how the industry works, and nor should it.
I think where Forrest could get in trouble is if he was showing an exhibit or a deliverable and showing the relationship to that pipe and a property line.
Oh, yeah. Woo! Property lines. We don't talk about property lines. So there, we've got in California, we've got a bunch more curse words than the rest of the country. For example, we've got the S word, surveying. I don't ever use the S word. I've got friends in different parts of the country, but mostly outside of the U.S., especially in UK. They use survey for everything. They talk about GPR surveys and concrete surveys and survey this and survey that. And I surveyed my friends. And you use the S word in California, you better have a pretty fancy stamp to back up your use of that word. Or M, the M word. Whew, I never talk about maps. I don't create maps. I create CAD overlays. I can't create a map. That's what you have to have a PLS for. Now, it looks just like what you and I and anybody else would call a map, but I can't call it a map because it's a naughty word.
Yeah. And I think it's a generational thing as well for us. You know, I consider myself an older guy in the profession because at this point, what's the average age of a surveyor? 59 or something like that. I'm not there yet, but I'm almost there. And, you know, it's an older generation that I think is a little more unaccepting of, you know, like the mapping you're talking about for us. You know, I think that the younger generation coming into the profession and that have been in the profession for 10 plus years, they get it a little more. You know, they see the big picture. And if surveyors aren't careful, all we're going to have left is legal surveys.
Yeah.
You know, establishing property boundaries, you know, everything else anybody could do. In theory,
it's the going to the old records and trying to retrace how they figured out a property line, and that's about the. And pretty soon that'll all get digitized, and then AI will go through and figure it all out for you. And but not to say that it's a profession that is antiquated by any means. Those that are in the older generation that are in it are going to soon be replaced by much more agile, smarter people that don't think and act the same way.
100%.
Well, so let's talk a little bit about technology. So when I was in middle school, I remember I saw a cell phone for the very first time, and it was my dad had to be on call for something or other, and he had to have a cell phone, and it was this big, it was massive, and it was kind of technically a flip phone because it had a mouthpiece that flipped open, I guess. But it was huge. I mean, you couldn't put it in your pocket. He had to put it in his briefcase, and he had a briefcase. But at the same time, like if you wanted to understand positioning, then I mean, GPS equipment, that was something that was had by the military, and it was expensive and complicated and big. And today, I mean, you know, I have a GPS receiver in my phone that, you know, is accurate to within like 20 feet or something. It doesn't tell me if I'm in the number one or the number two lanes. It can't even tell me that. But just the advancement of technology concerning positioning in general is just so rapid. What implications are there for surveying where we can do so much today? Just the average guy with, you know, like a $5,000 GNSS receiver, transmitter receiver setup, you know, doing a basic like Basin Rover RTK system, he can do a lot. Not survey grade stuff. You'd never do property lines or you know, anything, any legal descriptions here. But you can do a lot. What implications are there for the survey industry with the advancement of technologies and of the ease and inexpense of positioning equipment?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I look at it like, you know, you said you have a GPS receiver in your phone. So not only do you have a GPS receiver in your phone, you have a LiDAR scanner in your phone.
Yeah.
So put that into perspective, you know, I mean, unbelievable what our cell phones can do right now. And I think that,
what did our guest say last week? We're going to hit 50 years of GPS. GPS is 50 years old.
Unbelievable.
Either this year or next year, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the democratization of being able to measure is life altering for surveyors. You know, I mean, we have so many different ways to measure at our fingertips. And it's changing the profession. I mean, the challenge is that surveyors have a choice. They either have to adopt this technology and you know, and just use it to their advantage, work smarter, not harder. Or they can be stubborn like a lot of old surveyors are and just be like, ah, screw that. You know, I mean, you can't do it any better in the old way. You know, I mean, nobody can measure better than I can, blah, blah, blah.
It just seems like it's like the, I don't know what the right word is, but it's an industry that is so technology driven and it is driven you and the people in the industry are the most stubborn and
yes,
most resistant to change at the same time.
Like, it
baffles me, like that the dichotomy that it exists in there. Yeah,
100%. And I can remember like when GIS first started getting really popular, right? Surveyors like this is never going to make it. You know, I mean, there's no way. I mean, they need us, right? Look at it now. It's like every college and university has a GIS program, and
they're growing in programs, and the survey programs are going.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, you could even take our show, for example, and you look at all of the, I mean, we get a lot of survey business owners on the show, and not to be ageism, but the younger ones and the ones that talk about all the different ways the technology is going, and the ones that we meet at the conferences and are more on the cutting edge and the new development, those are the guys that are that in general have successful growing businesses.
100%.
And the other side is the guys that still work out of their garage and still have four or five employees and will never get out of that cycle.
Yep.
And I just see that big difference, and it's not going to take long before the younger guys are the industry, and that's where it takes off from there.
Thinking outside the box is so important now.
And eventually I think there's going to be a survey GIS convergence, and then it's going to be, and then the geospatial bubble will contain all of it.
Yeah. And another thing I just want to mention real quick, we are very fortunate, Sean and I, to be able to go to conferences, right? These amazing conferences like Geo Week. We were at InterGeo last year in Berlin. We get to see the cutting edge of this technology, and we get to bring that information, you know, back to our companies, in addition to using it to enhance our interviews, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing. And if you as a surveyor or anybody in the geospatial industry isn't committing the time to stay on top of this technology, to go to conferences like that, you're missing out.
Well, and then it comes to the conversation you're going to have with your client of, well, here's the limitations of what this can be done. Mm-hmm. And you may not realize there is somebody else out there, and those people are growing more and more, that don't have those same limitations.
Yep.
And you will be left behind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's huge. And, you know, we brought up age a few times here, and you know, let me just interject this here. Everybody should be following Kent and Sean. You guys are just always talking about the greatest stuff, and follow the Geoholics podcast. You need to subscribe to that. Very, very important. And of course, follow and subscribe Concrete Conversations, so we can keep getting fantastic guests like these guys on, and also definitely be following Kent and Sean here in Geoholics. Concerning age, you guys have brought that up a few times. There are some very serious programs that are committed to getting kids into surveying. In fact, what is it? Who's behind Get Kids Into Survey? I'm trying to remember who's.
Elaine Ball.
Elaine Ball. That's right. Yep, that's right. I follow Elaine.
Yeah. Elaine Ball is a creator of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so there's a if you have intentional efforts to try to attract the younger generations into your profession, then that's happening because they're not naturally coming in to the degree that they need to replace the retiring generations. How big of a problem is it bringing in, you know, fresh blood? That has a different connotation. Let's see. Fresh new young talent into surveying.
Massive problem. It is a massive global problem.
It is. That's one thing the show has taught us, is it is global. It is not That is not confined to even a region in the U.S. It's every country and every market has that same issue. Some do better than others, but in general, and it's an awareness problem. It's a bingo. Did you know this was a career path? And did you know in some instances you don't need a 4-year college degree to make a career out of it? And in a lot of instances you can. And one thing that we've learned is, and one thing Good Kids in the Survey is doing more is connecting at even the middle school and high school level, and connecting with guidance counselors to guide. That's the key to let these kids know, hey, you can be in construction, or you can be in engineering, and you can do this. And I think it's that. It's limited to the traditional career paths currently, and it's more of an awareness issue. And platforms like this and Get Kids in a Survey do a great job of spreading that awareness.
100%. And we'd be remiss if we didn't mention Trent Keenan at this point because Trent is probably one of the, best ambassadors for the profession of land surveying that I know anyways. Mm-hmm. He's the franchise owner of Get Kids Into Survey West Coast as well. So it's a great movement, you know, and it's an outreach program that originally started, you know, targeting like grade school kids, you know, like they're making coloring books and comic books and stuff like that. And actually even came up with like lesson plans to introduce kids to surveying. But again, this is based in the UK where things are done a little bit differently. But now it's expanding. You know, you mentioned, you know, Trent he's going to these conferences now, these national high school guidance counselor conferences, and, you know, having a booth set up there and introducing them to the profession of surveying. I always like to say it's the most underrated, unknown profession on the planet, because, you know, it's one of these things that, you know, you don't have to spend the money on a 4-year degree to have a successful career. Surveying is a perfect example of that. And it doesn't mean you have to become a licensed surveyor to make a lot of money. You can be a party chief. You know, you can be a senior CAD technician. These are positions that are, even in some cases, more needed than licensed surveyors.
Oh, yes.
Incredibly
in demand.
Yeah, huge demand.
Highly compensated.
And it's like, if you like math, if you like problem solving, if you like technology and video games, if you like working outside, it's a skill set that will be developed that you can use anywhere, anywhere globally. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. I saw just the other day that in Canada, as a matter of fact, they have, what's it called? Trade School University or something like that. They were actually a sponsor. The reason I looked them up is they were a sponsor on the latest UFC. I'm a huge UFC fan. And I saw their logo on the, you know, on the octagon. And I'm like, what? It's a trade school, university or college or whatever. I looked it up and I'm like, this is amazing. It's like it's almost like a pre-apprenticeship program for trades, right?
Oh, okay.
In Canada. Absolutely genius, and something that we could use so bad here in the States, for surveying, obviously, specifically. It's just like Sean nailed it on the head. It's awareness. You know, we as a profession have not done a good job historically of making people aware of how good of a profession land surveying is, even though Abraham Lincoln and George Washington were both land surveyors.
Yeah, if you like those guys.
I love those guys.
I would say, too, there's a little bit of a, it's not a branding problem, but it's an education thing as well. I think that once the technology started going and GPS was everywhere, it's harder to convince a young person that you can make a profession out of what's sitting on their cell phone. You know, the first answer is, well, I have my coordinates on my phone. Why do you need, how is that a job? And it's that awareness and education is like, well, there's actually a lot that goes into it. And it checks a lot of the boxes on what the incoming generations are looking for.
Totally.
They want to be, you know, they love the technology. They want a flexible work schedule. So they're not just going to a factory and they want the independence and they want to learn more. And it seems like there's a fit, and there just needs to be that connection between what the kids these days want to do and the need in the profession to bring kids into it.
Yeah, well said.
You know, I've got my oldest is 13, and he comes with me to some trade shows and things. In fact, I might be going to GeoWeek this year, which would be really fun. If I'm there, and then
I'll definitely, we'll be there.
We'll catch up with you guys. But he comes.
Anyone out there going to GeoWeek, come by and check out the Geoholics booth.
Booth 225.
Booth 225.
Shameless plug.
And so he's come with me to these shows, and it's really interesting to see the just the evolution of his mindset for what he could be doing in the future. He's very, very good with math, really a phenomenal student. In fact, today he's getting an honor roll award, and just very academically proficient, and really proud of the kid. And taking him to these trade shows to kind of see what dad does and be my cameraman has helped him to see he's kind of changing his view of, like, you know, maybe something in engineering or surveying. These are interesting professions. These are cool guys doing this. They use interesting technology. They do cool stuff. And all it took was exposing him to this. And it's kind of opening his eyes to, like, oh, wow, these guys, I'm really good at math. These guys are measuring things and running equations and stuff. This is really interesting. This could be a great fit. And then this was last week, 2 weeks ago. We watched the movie. It's from the 90s with Hugh Grant. The Englishman who walked up a hill and came down a mountain. Have you guys ever seen this show?
Oh yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
I have.
So this was
I have not seen it.
This was Hugh Grant. This was set in World War I. Or right around that time frame, early 20th century, and they were going around and measuring these, you know, just doing a survey of this part of the British Isles, and they came into Wales, and this town that has a name that is unpronounceable to me, they have this big hill. Well, they always called it a mountain, and by their definition, a mountain had to be at least 1,000 feet tall. And so the surveyors went up structure, and they determined it was like 980 something feet, and the townspeople, this little tiny town, they were just devastated, and the entire story centered around that the hero, the protagonist of this show, was the surveyor. And I realized while watching the show, like, how many shows are there? How many movies have I ever seen where, one, a surveyor even exists in the movie, and two, like, where he's the main character. And Hugh Grant was the hero protagonist, was the hero surveyor, and the town rallied around this and decided, like, okay, if the mountain needs to be 1,000 feet, we're going to make it. And they walked up the hill with buckets of dirt and raised the mountain by, like, 22 feet or something like this. And it was a really interesting movie.
How have you not seen this before, Kent?
But it was a great opportunity.
That's a good question. I'm embarrassed right now.
So I just explained to all my kids, because my kids, during this, of course, they were asking tons of questions. What are they doing with that tripod thing? What are they, you know, what is a surveyor? And I just had the opportunity to explain to them what a surveyor does, that he measures the heights of mountains and valleys and all this stuff. He's measuring the earth. And it was a really cool show. I never realized how potentially important to surveying that movie could be for people who watch movies from the 90s with Hugh Grant.
Sure. We'll have to promote that a little bit. Well, first I got to see it.
First you got to watch it. So go ahead and email Megan, tell you found what you're doing this weekend.
Yeah.
So you guys need to, okay, so here's the thing you guys need to do. You guys need to do a reaction to surveying, like have a split screen and do a reaction to the Englishman who walked up a hill and came down a mountain. You heard it here first.
Okay. Maybe we'll do that.
A little live stream?
Yeah.
I guarantee you won't get through that movie without crying.
Oh, geez, really?
Yeah.
Is it going to keep my attention? That's the biggest challenge. I'm so freaking ADD.
Nothing keeps your attention.
That if it doesn't keep my attention, I'm going to be...
The topic should, and, you know, the people rallying around and...
The surveyor.
The hero surveyor, yes, is going to touch a spot.
My kind of movie.
Right here. Aww. Right here.
It's, I mean, Kent, you're a UFC guy. I think there's a bare knuckle fight in there, too. So, I mean... So I think we're good.
It's right up my alley.
Check a
right
lot of boxes.
Well, and it has who's his name? I think it's like Colm, something else. He's Miles O'Brien from Star Trek. You guys know that character? Miles O'Brien.
Another show I've never watched one episode of.
Okay. So there's a television show. It's called Star Trek. And in it has this guy, character, Miles O'Brien. And he's this, and he's this actor born in Ireland. But anyway, he's one of the other main characters in this, that a dude in the town who owns the pub. And he's one of the big characters in there, and he's quite the ruffian and stuff, but gets people together and tells them, hey, look, if our hill is too short, then we'll get together as a town and raise it by 20 feet. And then they did it. So anyway, it's a fantastic show. You guys should watch it. You'd love it. And you'll just cry for how much it does.
So here's what I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Surveyor, pub, ruffian, hero.
Yeah.
You
that's
got
like
me.
That's like the story of your
you
life.
You got me.
You're like your autobiography. Okay, that's great. Yeah. we have one last main question from our worldwide survey of questions to submit to the Geoholics. It is, and this one takes kind of an interesting slant here. Prostitution, as we all know, has been called the oldest profession. Surveying is also a very old profession, but you apparently didn't win that coveted top spot. Your thoughts?
Ah. We've talked about this before.
I would say we're in good
You've
company.
Talked about this before? Sean.
we have. Not necessarily the specifics of how we, you know, the race to the first profession and how that played out. But, you know, I would like to think that because we talked about how it's like one of the oldest things ever is one, to obviously have a good time, and then two, to figure out where you were.
I think what you're trying to say is sex and measuring go together like peanut butter and jelly.
You know,
sex and maps.
You know, I went through about five different iterations of this question. The first four, my wife vetoed. The first four, she said, you can't say that. You're not allowed to read that.
Well, the first thing that came to mind, and whether it's appropriate or not, but the first thing that came to mind was you wake up after a great evening, and the first thing you think of is, how do I get back to where I was to have that good time again?
Oh, I like where you're going with that. Like orienteering.
Yes. Yes. You wake up in a strange place. Obviously, you had a good time.
Better known.
You're like, man, how do I, next time, I'm actually going to write down where I was and some, you know, geographical referenced locations. And all of a sudden, you drew a map to the local establishment,
better known as the Walk of Shame.
Yes,
I'm sure that's
documenting
exactly
the Walk of Shame may have been the first survey.
That's exactly how that profession started. I'm very sure of it. So it's the second oldest profession in the world. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, it's like, where did you go to have to do that? Then the guy, well, you follow, yes. go to the tree, and then take a left 15 paces, and he or she is right there.
Well, guys, we've covered a lot of ground today. That was also a surveying pun. So I'm really glad to have been able to have you guys on here. Everybody really should be following Sean and Kent, but you also both have to tell us how to pronounce your last names.
My name is Sean Faber. This is Kent Groh.
Kent Groh Kowalski.
Groh Kowalski before 1857.
Yep.
And then follow us, the Geoholics. You can always send us an email if you want more info, info@thegeoholics.com. The website has all of our podcasts on there. It's all on the platforms. Go to YouTube, follow our YouTube channel. We're posting more and more. Starting to do some live streams of some shows for those folks who are interested in that. And what else you got, Kent?
TikTok.
Yeah.
That's one of the big pushes here in 2024 is TikTok.
Yep. Get. Basically, trying to get as much content out there as to as many platforms as we can.
Yeah. And one last shameless plug.
Please.
Forrest was on episode 12 of the Geoholics.
Was he really?
Yes.
Forrest was on episode 12.
So
I was there with Craig Campbell.
Craig Campbell, Forrest, another good Canadian.
Yes, Craig the Canadian.
That's
Craig,
right.
Among my Canadian friends, Craig is one of the best. Now, I mean, okay, all my other Canadian friends are amazing too, but Craig is amazing. Amazingest.
It's hard to have a favorite Canadian friend because they're all so freaking nice.
Oh, really? My gosh.
Yeah, there's not one just that you good don't people. Like. Yeah.
They're phenomenal. Sorry. So I was actually, this was a year or something ago. I was with two Canadians. Let's call them Canadian 1 and Canadian 2. And when I tell this story, both of them are going to know who they are. Canadian 1, it was like a competition between those two to see who could be the nicest. And so we were all three of us were staying in the same hotel, separate rooms, but the same hotel. And we all got back to the hotel at the same time, and we were all walking towards the elevator. And Canadian 1 stays outside the elevator as Canadian 2 and I get in. And Canadian 1 says, "Okay, you guys have a good night." And we say, "Like, well, we're all on the same. Let's come on. Let me jump in the elevator with us." And he said, "No, I don't want to be too crowded for you guys. I'll take the stairs." And Canadian 1 was on the fifth floor, and he's also in his 70s. And Canadian 2 and I were 20 to 30 years younger than him. And he was like, no, I don't want it to be crowded in the elevator. I'll just take the stairs. Because he's that Canadian. That summarizes all Canadians perfectly. All Canadians are amazingly, wonderfully nice people.
They really are.
100%.
Can't argue with that.
Yep. They really are. Guys, thanks so much for being on. It was a
my
pleasure.
Second favorite people.
Everybody, make sure to follow the Geoholics. Remember, Geoholics is something that you can listen to while driving or operating heavy machinery. So don't worry about that. And everybody, check out Sean Faber. I always say, whenever I read your name, I always say Faber because I feel like it sounds really fancy to say Faber, but we can say Faber.
Yeah, and then when people get to know me, they realize that's not appropriate.
Okay, Faber. Okay,
sounds like a model, like you're a male model or something.
Previous job.
And Ken Crow. Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure. Look forward to doing it again sometime.